Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. Two verses and a chorus shy of a hit song. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino.
And the Music Road Show.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Welcome back to the Music Row Show. We're glad that you came back.
Yeah, we are. Make sure and join the conversation. Go to facebook.com/The Music Row Show and come on in. We've been getting some, I see Joel Freer and Tammy Loving are listening in and saying howdy.
Hey, Joel.
Hey, Tammy.
And you can listen, you can catch us on the Twitters too if you want to talk to us
on
there.
On the Twitters and the Instagrams. Also,
well, you can't talk to us on Instagram.
No,
during
but
the
afterwards
show.
You can.
Well, there's that. Hey, we got something kind of cool going on starting next week.
Next week.
You know, we've been doing this show for 10 years.
Coming up on 10 years,
and we're changing something up. We're still going to be bringing in hit writers and recording artists and industry leaders to show for you. But once a month, we're going to change it up and shine a spotlight on local songwriters.
Yeah, absolutely. And both Scott and I are going to be picking somebody every week, and it'll be
One full show each month. We're going to call it the Music Row Showcase, and it's going to be, you know, we've been out playing for years
sure,
here in town.
We see people who are amazing songwriters, but they just haven't gotten that break yet. So we're going to shine the light on those folks.
That's right. And it's starting next weekend, so you're going to want to listen in and see which one of your friends is on the radio.
There you go. Yeah.
All right. Let's get to it, and please introduce this amazing person we have with us tonight.
Absolutely. Well, we're very happy to welcome back Grammy Award winner and Grand Ole Opry members, Jeannie Seely. In fact, 2017 marks her 50th year as an Opry member. That's pretty amazing. Her career as a recording artist and a hit songwriter is legendary here at Music City, with her songs having been recorded by legends like Farron Young and Merle Haggard, Ray Price, Willie Nelson, Ernest Tubb, and rest in peace, Lil Jimmy Dickens, as well as so many others. Jeannie has a brand new album out called Written in Song, which features her versions of 14 songs that she wrote that were hits for other artists, including all those folks we just mentioned above. So we're just thrilled to say, Jeannie Seely, welcome back to the Music Row Show.
Yay!
Thank you so much. It's great to be back. And thank you for inviting me back. How long has it been since
I've been a while. I think,
We were at the other studio.
I think you were at WLAC, weren't you?
Downtown somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I never remember where I've been, but I like to see
we.
Out here in my hood.
That's right.
I live,
well, that's why we came here, is because it's Jeannie's hood. So.
Yeah,
that's right.
I wish
you'd stop spray painting everything, though. I wish you'd stop tagging everything with the JS. Hey, this album, this is a great country album. I love it.
Well, thank you. It's got a little bit of everything in it. You know, the boys in the band, some of the most incredible musicians in this town. They're still the boys in the band to me.
Yeah.
But when we were in the studio, they mentioned that each song is so totally different from the other one. I think one of the reasons where they're, you know, there's a separation, because they were written over a long period of time.
Sure.
From 63 on up, you know. That maybe my mood changed, what I had learned, the environment I was in at the time, I think, probably made the difference. But it surprised me, too, the extreme of it.
Well, what kind of memories did revisiting these songs stir up for you?
Some good ones and a few bad ones. But, you know, like I was enjoying listening to Colin talk earlier, and it is something when you're writing a song, you have, and if the people are gonna feel the emotion, you've got to let it all out. Mm-hmm. You've got to really bare your soul, and sometimes that's hard to do, but if you don't write it, the what inspired the song, nobody else can identify with it either. So it has to be raw, I think.
Yeah. Wow.
But there were some fun fun times, memories, like she always got what she wanted. That Jimmy Dickens yep, recorded. Right. Lord, I wish that she'd wanted me. Hank and I was married to Hank Cochran at that time, and we had bought a boat, an ocean trawler, and we're sailing it around the south of Mexico, where he was, and I was flying in and out. But it had been a dream to sail it into Acapulco Harbor, you know. Yeah. So anyway, we're all up on the fly bridge, all excited about, and all of a sudden, this song was all there. The whole idea, the melody, every line. So I went running downstairs and got the legal pad, and I'm writing everything down and the chord changes and everything. By the time I got finished and got back up there, we were already in and docked.
Hank, so you missed it.
Oh, Hank was so mad at me. And he, what were you doing, you know, writing a song now? And I'm like, Hank, you know that if it happened to you, you would have stopped what you were doing and wrote the song. That's what you've always done. He said, well, all right, well, sing it to me. And if it's good enough,
I won't be mad.
I'll tell the captain to take it back out and we'll come in again. So I sang the song, and Hank never said a word to me. He just told the captain, crank it up. Take it back out. So we got to sail back in again, and everybody else was saying it was so fun. I'm glad we had to do it twice, you know. So then we celebrated. But I'm very proud of the song, and keep your fingers crossed for me, because Gene Watson heard it the other day, and he said, Jeannie, where has this song been? I want this song. And I said, where have you been? Dickens has been singing it for years, you know. But keep your fingers crossed. I'd love to hear Gene Watson do this.
Oh, my. What? Awesome. Now, I want to kind of dig into what you just said. So you're on a boat, you're coming into Acapulco, and then it just hits you. Talk about that as a songwriter. What, you know...
And I have no idea where that came from.
Because a lot of times you have your antenna up and you catch little words, yeah. But obviously none of that came out.
No, I have when you're on a no boat. Idea where that came from.
It was in but the air.
Just the yep. line, I don't know if somebody said something, and I've just, but all I heard it, she always got what she wanted. Lord, I wish that she'd wanted me. And I thought, you know, and then I started thinking she wanted this, and I did it, you know. And it was just all there. I have no idea.
Wow.
That's awesome.
He backed the boat up.
Yeah.
Crank
told
it up.
The captain, take it back out. So that was a fun memory. You know?
Man.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Well, so many big names have cut these songs over the years and had hits with them. How tempting was it for you to try to recreate the hit versions rather than try to do your own, you know, Jeannie Seely way of doing it?
Most all of them were done pretty close to the demos, pretty close. But I didn't even thought about that. I just sang it the way
you just sang it the way you sang it. Yeah.
It. Yeah.
Okay.
And
I noticed that on Sometimes I Do, even that first one, and I love Ernest Tubbs' version, right. but you even swung it up a bit more. There's a
I
little
love
more.
Swing,
me too.
So, yeah, that is one that I kicked up to swing. And now that song was written that very same boat trip.
Really?
Yeah, I came home and
did he have to back in a third time?
No, I don't even know. No, but I know where when I started. Of course, there was a lot of drinking going on down there, Mexico, on that boat. But cerveza was everywhere.
I see.
But
I see.
I remember when I was writing that, I could just hear Ernest singing it. I could hear him in my mind. Used to be when I would write a country song, when I was writing it all, I could always hear George Jones singing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe later on, I might pull it out of that vein, you know, a little bit to pitch it another way. But that's usually who I heard in my mind when I was writing a country song was Jones. But this one, I heard Ernest all the way through. And I remember when I played it for him, I told him, I said, Ernest, I hope you'll like it. But I said, from the minute I started writing this, I could hear you singing. So he listened to the demo and he said, Jeannie, honey, I believe you're right. I believe the old man can get this one for Thrilled. Oh, so thrilled. What a wonderful man he was. And I heard you talking about your songwriter showcase that you want to do. And my mind went to Ernest, you know, because with the Midnight Jamboree, Ernest always gave the new artists, new songwriters, always a platform to mm-hmm. perform. And David McCormick has done a great job of carrying that on through. And here about a year or so ago, I tried something new and different at the Midnight Jamboree.
That's right.
Nobody had ever done a songwriter showcase there. And I thought, well, it's going over so big at the Bluebird and at Station Inn and everything. Let's try it with the Jamboree where people can listen and hear the stories. And
Billy Yates and Bobby Tomberlin.
And young artist Jackie Lee.
That's right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
It was fun.
And you have, by the way, let's go ahead and plug that, because you have a show coming up at Ernest Tubbs in March or April?
March 4th. We'll be doing the Midnight Jamboree again.
That's right. And this is a big year for the Jamboree. They're mm-hmm. having, is it their 50th or 75th?
I'm not sure.
I can't remember.
It's a big year for them.
It's a big anniversary. It may be 75th.
I'll look it up here at the break.
March 4th.
Yeah.
What time is it at?
It's at 10 o'clock. You know, the old joke used to be, what time is the Midnight Jamboree? It's midnight. Well, now we've moved it up to 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
So it was perfect when the Opry went to midnight years mm-hmm. ago. Yeah. And then you go right straight over and do the Jamboree. But now that we end the Opry a little sooner, why? It still works out great.
Yeah, because you don't want to go to Shoney's and eat, and then you want to go to sleep after that. So you need to go right from one to the other.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it again. I'll be taking the full band in.
Oh, that's great. Mm-hmm. That's great. Should we take a break?
Let's do that.
All right. This segment brought to you by our friends at Main Street Productions. We love these guys. Listen, if you're an artist and you need a video for something, it could be maybe an EPK video.
Yep. Or a music video.
Or a music video. Yeah. These guys are great. They've been doing it for 20 years.
20 years, and they've got all the high-tech gadgets that you use for shooting feature films, because they do that as well.
Right.
They've done a lot of that, but they've produced a lot of country, pop, bluegrass videos, and they've won multiple awards for cinematography and editing. So these guys are legit. They're really, really good. And you just did a project recently I was intimately involved in.
Yes, you were. Yes, you were.
And was producer Logan. That's right. Yeah. And they were awesome to work with. Awesome to work with.
And you know what? I'm going to brag on them a bit, because we filmed on a Saturday.
Right.
I had the finished product just a few days later.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
It was like whiplash. It was so
quick. I was not expecting that, and it was done, and it was actually on TV shows in Europe that next Friday. So, you know, you want to talk, because I've talked
to the internet.
Well, but I've talked to friends who've also done videos, and they're still waiting on the finished product.
Right.
You know, it's still in editing, and we got to do this and this and this. Man, they nailed it.
Nailed it. You can find them online at mainstreetproductions.org, mainstreetproductions.org. And we are going to be back with a whole lot more of Jeannie Seely here on the Music Row Show. So
yep.
Come on back.
Sometimes I do. That's when I get to thinking about you. And when I'm thinking about you and all we've been through, sometimes I feel like crying. Sometimes I do.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show. We're here with Jeannie Seely. And that is the first song off of her brand new album called Written in Song. And it's her doing a bunch of her songs that she wrote over the years that were hits for other artists. And now mm-hmm. she's put them out in her own voice.
And it just dropped
Friday. Friday the 13th.
What a great time. Come on into that microphone.
Perfect.
Hear
oh,
you.
Yeah, Friday the 13th. I said, well, you know, I think that's a good sign.
It's good luck.
Good luck. Yeah.
I'd stick with that, too.
Well, Heino brought this up, that this is a big year for you because it's the 50th anniversary of your Grammy Award for Best Country Female Performance. It's the 50th anniversary of your becoming a member, joining the Grand Ole Opry.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. Actually, I picked up the Grammy on March 2nd of 67, but it was for the year of 66.
Oh, okay.
So
forget that. I don't even know why I said that
you're right, though. It was, I got the award in 67, but, you know, I claimed it last year so I could celebrate all of last year, too. And now this year I'm concentrating on celebrating my 50th anniversary as a member of the Opry. And it's just phenomenal to me that I don't know where the years have gone. I have just had such a wonderful ride.
Well, what stands out to you about that time in your career when you were invited to join the Opry and just where you were there as a writer and as a performer?
I was in such a whirlwind, you know, when you get that first hit record. And of course, we had no artist development or anything like that back then.
Webster PR.
No Webster PR. Actually, I've never had a manager my entire career.
No kidding?
Never had a manager. And why I'm still here, I don't know. But when that first record hits, you're in such a whirlwind. You're trying to get everything together. You need trying to figure out how you're going to do everything. And, of course, all the offers are coming in all at once, you know, for you to do everything. So it's really pretty much a blur. But I was working on the road with Porter Wagoner. I came here in October of 65. And then Porter hired me a month later to work his road shows with him.
Right.
And then we started looking for material and recorded in March, and everything broke wide open in June. And so it was having to leave Porter's show. I was just getting settled into that and learning so much, and then having to leave to go on the road and do my own thing. But when I was on the road with Porter, it was funny. I wanted the Opry so much, and they kept calling me every week and telling me where my record went in the charts. And I'd like, well, that's great, but did Mr. Divine call? Because Art Divine was the manager of the Opry then. And did he call? Did he say anything about, you know? And finally, Hal Smith Artist Agency is where I was working as a booking agent. And I asked Hal if he would talk to him. And he said, well, you know, I've gone to bat for two or three artists and they didn't stick with it. And he said, I said I would never do that again. But he said, you seem so sincere. He said, if you will promise me that you're going to stick with the Opry and stay loyal to it, I'll talk to him. So wow. I wish he was still here. I wish Hal Smith was still with us so he could see that I kept my promise.
You stuck with it, yeah.
Well, there's just no place I'd rather be, to be honest. I absolutely love the Opry. I love everything about it. It truly is an extended family.
Mm-hmm. You can tell. You can tell when you're in the audience, you can tell when you're listening, and you can really tell when you're backstage watching everybody interact. I love being there.
I love the fact that I get to host. That was a door that was closed to women for so many years.
When did that change?
Well, when Bob Whitaker came in, each manager that came along, I would make my same appointment and go in and talk to them about why can't women host the Grand Ole Opry? And it was always on a deaf ear. But the minute Bob Whitaker took over as manager, I went in and he said, what have you got on your mind? And so I started my whole little spiel. And he said, what are you saying to me? Bob didn't even realize that was the case. Of course, Bob Whitaker had been managing Opryland Park. he was used to everybody had a microphone, everybody had a speaking part,
right?
And he just had not realized it. And he said, "Well, why is that?" And I said, "I don't know. Nobody's ever been able to tell me." Hal Durham always just said, "It's tradition." And I said, "Well, it may be tradition, but it sure smells like discrimination." You know. But anyway, Bob said, "Let me think about it." And then he called me and he said, "Okay, Seely, I'm going to throw you out there." And he said, "But you better do the job or both of us are going to be in trouble." So
you were the first.
I was the first to consistently host.
So how nerve-wracking was that first time then?
Actually, it wasn't that bad because I did my homework. Actually, the first time I ever hosted the Opry was in January of 81. Hal Durham was still manager there. And the only reason that I did then, there was a snow and ice storm. I was the only Opry member in the building. And back then, we started at 6:30, and the first portion was a 15-minute segment. And so I'm like, okay, how do you do this? Because Del Reeves was supposed to be the host. I was the guest. And then Del and the 15 close out 15. So I'm thinking, I thought, oh, okay. So I do the opening number. I welcome everybody, go to a commercial, and then I put on my first guest. And I thought, who is my guest?
You are.
There was nobody else there, you know. So I asked Debbie Logue, was the assistant then. I said, "So who is going to be my guest?" She said, "Anybody in your band want to sing?" And I said, "Well, let me see." So Tommy Hannum, do y'all know Tommy Hannum?
No.
Plays steel with Winona now. Okay. And he was playing steel for me at that time. Great singer, good songwriter, great musician. And I said, "Tommy, you want to sing on the Grand Ole Opry?" So he did, and it was just awesome.
That's awesome.
But anyway, at the right before the last song, I said, "If I seem a little nervous, this is the first time I've ever hosted the Grand Ole Opry, and I'm doing so because I'm the only one here." And I told the audience, and I said, "In fact, our manager, Hal Durham, is trying to get here." And I said, "How am I doing so far, Hal?" Got a good laugh. I said, "The boss is listening, you know."
Yeah.
But that's a change that I'm so happy about. From the very beginning, I do my homework. I want to know who that is. And if there's time, and it's a new artist that I don't know, I like to go by the dressing room and meet them so we feel a little more comfortable with each other when we get to the stage. But I knew that if I didn't do my homework and didn't present people right, that the door would be closed very suddenly again, not only against me, but all of the women coming up behind me. I'm so proud to see the way Lori Morgan and Pam Tillis handle that with such ease.
Right.
But it's been there for them. So I'm very proud of that part.
That's great.
Well, you should be. So country music, like most other genres, has gone through a big evolution over the years and will continue to evolve over the years. How has that evolution in your time at the Opry affected the Opry?
Well, you know, there's been a lot of complaints through the years. And to me, what that shows me is how revered the Grand Ole Opry is. When you love something so much, you're afraid of any change. You're afraid of anything different because you're afraid it's going to ruin what you've got. But if you think back, I mean, it's like I tell people all the time, hey, I was new one time, and when I first came in, they didn't really consider me traditional country at that time.
Really?
Because Don't Touch Me, my first record, got played on what they called top 40 stations back then. So, and I remember them all complaining when we first did strings on some of the records.
Right,
and of course,
right.
I was there when the drums first came in and full set of drums and everything. So I've been hearing people complain for 50 years about the Opry. But I think the Opry is very healthy. There have been some changes. I can't say that I like all of the new music coming in, but I didn't like all of the music when I got here.
Sure.
Nobody
likes everything.
No, you don't. But that's the wonderful thing about the Opry. There's so much there, and it moves so quickly.
Right.
We have a little bit of everything at the Opry, and like I said, I think it's very healthy. It's active, and I have every bit of confidence that the Grand Ole Opry is going to go on for another 90 years, and nobody could be happier about that than me.
Who excites you musically these days as far as the new people that are coming into the Opry? Are there people that you just really see or are committed, like you made your promise to somebody so long ago? Are there people that you feel are really committed to keeping that circle unbroken?
Well, our newest members in Daily Invention.
Oh, yeah.
Talk
they are
about
amazing.
Exciting, man. They are still growing so fast. And there again, they're bringing in a strong bluegrass influence, but they're also bringing in a strong gospel.
Oh, yeah.
Inflection, too, which I think we're all looking for. We all are looking for that, especially in country music. I am so proud of the way Carrie Underwood has stayed loyal to the Grand Ole Opry.
Yes, she has.
She has not changed one bit. Her whole personality. She is just that sweet little girl that she was when she first went on the Idol, I think. And she's very much a family person, and I can see how much she appreciates the Opry family. I know I went into her here a couple of years ago. I was looking for somebody, I don't remember who now, but I got mixed up on which dressing room they went. And I just, shaving a haircut, knocked and opened the door, went in, and it was Carrie's. I said, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to burst in on you. I was looking." She said, "No, come on in." And so went in and visited for a little bit. So
That's
she's
wonderful.
Just an absolute delight. Of course, Brad Paisley. Of course, he's old stuff now. I like to remind Vince Gill how old he is. That's just a fun thing. I remember when you were a new kid, Vince. And but, I'm just, through the years, I think they've added some wonderful people who have shown the respect for the Opry that should be there.
I'm curious about that because you mentioned that, you know, that some people haven't stayed loyal to the Opry. What does that mean exactly? What happened? Because I can't imagine not being loyal to the Opry.
To me, the loyalty carries on for me where you talk about the Opry out there on your shows. And
I see.
You
and some artists over the years haven't done that.
Some of them don't ever bother to mention again. And also, your commitment—you need to be there.
A certain amount of shows a year, right?
Right. The Opry needs you too.
I see.
And don't you know? Okay, you take all the glory of being signed and blah blah, and all the press, and then that's the end of it.
I see.
No, this is. You know, it works hand in hand.
It's a relationship.
Sure it is. The Opry will be there for you, but you need to be there for the Opry, too.
Gotcha.
And that's what I mean about Carrie. She is there. She comes, and the fans love her. All ages love Carrie.
Oh, yeah.
They like Carrie like they did Dickens. Didn't matter what age you are, you had to love little Jimmy Dickens.
Absolutely.
Well, I want to talk a bit about songwriting and how do you feel like your creative process has changed over the years? You kind of talked about as music changed, all as you're looking at all these songs, over 14 songs, you saw changes. But how do you feel like the process has changed for you? Are you a fast writer? Do you agonize over every line? How are you?
Well, I'm trying to get into setting appointments and writing like people do today. I think it's a very healthy way to write. I can't say that all the my writing experiences in the past were very healthy, but they handle it so much like a business now.
Yeah.
And I think that's a wonderful way to do it. I haven't written a lot in the last few years, but life just happens and goes a different way. But everything's kind of settling in my life right now, and I'm going to have some. Once I get through promoting this CD, I think. I told a friend, I'm going to tell you honestly, Webster PR is wonderful, but they keep you busy. And I wrote an email to one of my friends, and I said, I have decided you should record new CDs. Just like having children, you're supposed to do it when you're young because there's a lot of work in keeping up with it. But anyway, things are leveling out in my life now to where I'm going to have time to write a little bit more. And I'm so thrilled that so many of the young artists and writers have asked me to write with them. One I'm really excited about is Charlie Washam.
Oh, wow.
Charlie is just one of the bright new talents, and I will love the day when he gets to come to the Opry.
Oh, that's exciting. Nice. Let's take a break.
Yeah.
We're going to be back with lots more with Jeannie Seely. You are listening to The Music Row Show. We'll be right back.
That I've got to leave. As you know, I'm a rodeo cowboy. I heard they're riding bulls down in Mesquite.
All right, welcome back
That's
to the Music Row Show.
Wait. Rodeo cowboy. Breaking bronze and getting broke.
Sorry, I just want to hear a little more.
We're here with Jeannie Seely. And that is Life of a Rodeo Cowboy, a song that she co-wrote and had a hit with Merle Haggard. And actually, I noticed that in his version, there's a couple of lines that he said different than how you sang it, at least on this version.
There was another verse that Merle recorded in mm-hmm. his record. And actually, it's the verse that Hank wrote. I don't know if that was subconscious that I left that out or not.
Well,
no, I just, when I changed it for a female lyric, because obviously it was written for a male, and for years I never sang the song because I didn't see any way for a female to sing it. Then all of a sudden I thought, all I have to do is say, he said, in front of it, and then
right.
I'm just telling you
the
what
story.
He said, yeah. I'm quoting him from then on out. But the verse that Haggard did, that Hank wrote, said, hot beer and cold stale hamburgers kind of makes a mm-hmm. meal hard to enjoy, and mm-hmm. it kind of makes you think of your mama's chicken. That's a lie. I don't know. It just didn't feel comfortable to me singing it, and I just didn't see any reason to sing it, so I didn't. I love being a senior.
So there you go.
I love being a senior. You can just say and do pretty much whatever
nope,
you want.
I don't want to do that.
You know, and you're one of the writers of the song, so
what
there you go.
What are they going to do to me now?
Yeah. With that song, not only how cool to have a Merle cut because he's such an amazing songwriter in his own right, mm-hmm. but when I listened to his version, I heard a familiar voice singing backup in that song. That was you doing the backups.
Yeah. I did. I also sang on his record of Ramblin' Fever.
Did you really?
And on Always on a Mountain When I Fall. Yeah.
No kidding.
I guess whenever he and Bonnie are arguing.
Oh, I got to go back and listen.
That's awesome.
Okay.
But Merle, I had a real bad car accident in 1977. And after I got out of the hospital and was recuperating at home, Merle came to Nashville, and he called one day, and my friend came and said, Merle's on the phone. He wants to come out and see you. And I had to have the whole left side of my face had to be rebuilt. I was
oh, my.
Pretty bad. And although I looked okay to everybody. It didn't feel right to me, so mm-hmm. I had to overcome that. I said, tell Merle I appreciate it, but I really don't want to see him right now. So she came back in. She said, Merle said he didn't care whether you wanted to see him or not. He wants to see you, and he's coming. So he came out to the farmhouse and visited and everything, and he asked me if I had written anything. So I played him the last demo session, and it had Rodeo Cowboy on it. It also had the ballad that's on this CD called My Love for You.
Right.
And he recorded that too. And I never, Chris LeDoux recorded Rodeo right. Cowboy.
Oh,
I
yeah.
never got to meet him.
Oh.
And I would love to have met him.
Man.
And Mo Bandy says he's going to cut it.
Well, so come on, Mo.
Keep our fingers crossed there.
Well, I would imagine that most artists don't imagine that they'd still be singing a song they're about to record 50 years later.
No.
And, you know, because if you did, you'd be extra careful to make sure that you really like that song. Has that ever happened to you? And what tips can you give to artists picking songs today for what they should be thinking about in that vein?
Yeah. Well, I can tell you this, that I feel so fortunate to have gotten the song Don't Touch Me,
mm-hmm.
because there have been some records that I recorded through the years. I was just as, even though I needed a hit at the time, I was kind of glad that one didn't do it, because mm-hmm. I didn't like the song and didn't want to sing it. But I never get tired of singing Don't Touch Me. It is such a classic piece
song.
Of material. It really is. I remember when we were looking for songs, and Hank asked me, he said, what do you want to sing? What song could anybody bring you that you would really like? I said, well, I'd like to have a ballad that gives me room to sing. And I would like it to be something that said something, so you didn't have to be male or female, young, mm-hmm. old, married, or single. That's, mm-hmm. That record, that song would touch you. And he joked then, he said, you don't want much. want a hit. But I think that he wrote that in that song because it appeals to everybody.
Right.
So, yeah, I would, I don't know that you really have the choice to make that decision, you know.
Especially when you're a newer artist.
I didn't have a lot of choices as a new artist. And I know one song that I turned down that was an ultimate smash, and I knew it would be for her. But I also knew that I didn't want to sing it at the time because it wasn't something I believed in, and I knew that I wouldn't want to keep singing it. And that's One's on the Way.
Oh,
okay.
Loretta
did.
For Loretta.
It just was so not me at all, you know, that I couldn't even sing the lyrics. Shel Silverstein was very upset at me at the time.
Really?
And Owen wasn't real happy because I did need a hit record. But I also believe somewhere along the way you have to be true to who you are and what you are and what you believe. And that just wasn't me. And I could hear Loretta. I knew it would be a smash for Loretta.
Right.
Awesome. Well.
And she lived, you know, her life followed more that
It
pattern.
Was, yeah, more mm-hmm. more in tune with her.
Yeah.
Well, we need to take one last break. We're going to be back with one more segment with Jeannie Seely. I'm loving this conversation. I'm so glad you're here. Okay. Stick around. We'll be back on the Music Row Show. Welcome back to the Music Row Show. That's Jeannie Seely doing We're Still Hanging In There, Jesse. Or Ain't We, Jesse? And that's off of her brand new project called Written in Song. Just dropped on the 13th, Friday.
Just on the Friday the 13th, which we have decided is very good luck. Mm-hmm. That is awesome.
Yeah.
And this is a great CD. This is a bunch of songs, 14, as a matter of fact, that Jeannie wrote or co-wrote and that had hits with for other artists. And so now this is the first time she's put them all out together with her singing them.
Talk about this song, the one we just heard, if you don't mind, because yeah. I've had a crush on Jesse for 25 years. But
you and everybody.
Right, right. So talk about writing the song and recording it. So it sounds like you all had fun.
Well, during that time, in the late 70s, I was married to Hank Cochran, and then she was married to Waylon. And life with both of them was just a total roller coaster. You never knew from one day to the next what planet they were on. And I'd gone through some crazy thing with Hank, and I'd heard a story about what happened with Waylon and Jesse, and I sat there and I thought, I can't even believe this. And I realized that all of our friends were already divorced, but Jesse and I were still hanging in there. So I got to thinking about it and got to laughing, and that's when I wrote it. And it was during that time that Waylon had the hit on "Are You Sure Hank Done It This Way?" So right. That line just fell in, "Are you sure Audrey done it this way?" You know. But I talk about Jan couldn't live with Big Harlan. Tammy finally gave up on Jones. Still got old Hank and old Waylon. Of course, that's almost like being alone, you know. And on the record, Jan Howard came in and sang harmony on the chorus and, of course, threw her little ad-lib line in there, which is a classic.
Right.
And then I sent the file to Arizona, asked Jesse if she would take my voice off the last chorus and put hers on. And that distinctive voice of hers when she comes in is so classic. I've been a fan of her since Miriam Eddy. You remember her, that
yep,
album
yep.
that she did, Miriam? Oh, I never get tired of listening to that.
Oh, it's, you know, I'm a little, the one that gets me is just "I'm Not Lisa." Every time I hear that, I just stop whatever I'm doing.
Yeah. Classic song. Starting out with that one note. Yep. What a brilliant idea that was.
Yeah.
She's great.
Man.
I wanted to say real quick.
Please.
The reason in doing this album really was I chose songs out of my catalog that these artists had recorded. Because when you think about it, there is no more ultimate compliment to you than somebody to choose your song when you're living in this town, in this business, and so many songs and songwriters, so much to choose from, that it hit me one day how blessed I had been that these people even listened to my songs, let alone record them. So I chose these songs so that I could kind of pay tribute to these wonderful artists. And one that I want to mention, Farron Young had the big hit on "Leaving and Saying Goodbye," but Dawn Sears had such
an incredible
version.
I love her version.
So as one more nod to Dawn, I wanted to do that, and I invited her daughter, Tess Sears, to come in and sing harmony. And she'd never been in the studio before, so that was kind of a fun thing.
And Kenny's doing some fiddle work on that one, too.
Fiddle and singing harmony.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's great.
But that was my reason, just to kind of pay tribute to these wonderful friends and heroes of mine that recorded my songs.
That's tremendous. You have a lot going on. I was looking at your schedule, and you're booked out through next February. But you have a cruise coming up.
Uh-huh.
And that's
doing the Country Family Reunion Cruise.
Right.
My buddy Bill and bunch of great artists. That's always fun. This is the 20th anniversary of the Country Family Reunion shows. Can't believe that either. So a lot of us that were the ones that are still here that were on that original one are on this anniversary cruise. Looking forward to that. Next year in 2018, they have a lot of confidence in me, but I'll still be here and be kicking. But we've been asked to do the Country Music Grand Ole Opry Cruise in 2018.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Got some shows coming up this year. I'm doing something different, too, on shows. Tim Atwood, who was the staff keyboard player for the Opry for so many years, is – doing his own thing now. And I had so many people ask me about doing acoustic shows, and I don't feel comfortable with just a guitar, but I do with the piano. So Tim and I are doing a bunch of concerts, he and I and the baby grand.
Nice.
And he'll sing harmony with me, and I sing some harmony lines with him. I feature him, and then we close out with some duets and just have fun. You know, we've been friends for 40-something years, and so it's just a fun thing. I got some shows coming up with Johnny Rodriguez this year.
Wonderful.
Oh, really? All right.
I just found out about that.
He was just on with us about a month or two ago. Yeah.
Gene Watson, I think with Mo Bandy. And
that's great.
And did a couple of shows with Mickey Gilley and Johnny Lee, and it's always fun to spend time with them. So.
Now, was that in Missouri?
Yeah, and, I was supposed to be in Wisconsin with them, but that snowstorm went through, and I kind of checked out on that. I said, you boys,
it's
going to
be what temperature again?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they were going on the buses where you have a little bit more control, but when you're flying, and changing planes, and I couldn't risk being stranded in an airport somewhere. We don't do that anymore, boys. We just don't do that
yeah.
anymore.
Right.
You all are wonderful to have me on again. Now, it's been a long time, and I'm glad to be back.
We're happy to have you. And again, it's a fantastic CD. Something I want to point out or bring to people's attention about you, and I encourage people to go to jeannieseely.com and look at your website, and you kind of do a little year in review on your website. You're late, but you were late last year, so you're right on time. You're doing fine.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate your reading.
Yeah. You established a schedule, and you're sticking
to it.
That's
right. Yeah. But the thing that I really that stuck out to me, and it sticks out to me when I see you play live and when you were just talking about your shows with Tim, is even in your letter that you write, your review, I'd say 70% of that stuff that you write about is putting a spotlight on the other people and people around you and other things that you're excited by and people that you're excited by musically. And I just think, you know, someone that's had such an amazing career, it would be really easy to just talk about me. But it says a lot to me about you that you are constantly sharing that light with other people. And I think that's something to be commended and just something that I've always noticed about you. So thank you for that.
I appreciate that. I hadn't stopped to think about it, but I talk about things and people who are interesting to me. And of course, the fans that have supported me all these years, I can't even imagine. Some of them I've known my entire career. I have some friends, fans that I just saw recently in Pennsylvania that I met through Ernest Tubb. They were Ernest fans.
Really?
They became mine. It's just awesome. What a wonderful business we share, guys.
That is amazing.
Indeed.
So the website is jeannieseely.com. You can go check it out there.
And you can buy the album, Amazon, iTunes. Amazon, you can buy the physical copy. Mm-hmm. Is that where you go for that?
Right.
And then they can come to your shows and buy them there.
Not to mention the Opry. Come to the Opry.
Yeah, the Opry gift shops. We've got an Ernest Tubb record shop, all my same people. And certainly through the website, too.
Perfect.
Beautiful.
And I'm signing them as much as I can keep up with it. So far, you know, if you let me know when you order it, who you want me to sign it for, I'll do that.
Okay.
Perfect. All right. Well, thanks so much for being with us. And thank you out there for tuning in once again to The Music Row Show. We love it that you do that. Hit us up on our website, themusicrowshow.com. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll see you next time. Strong.